Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest, Sana Goldberg, got noticed when she did a TED Talk to Harvard students on the value of nursing as a career. Probably not what their parents bribed coaches to get them into Harvard for, haha, but she makes the case that nurses, seen as peers by the patients frequently, see more and hear more about patients' lives and about what works and what doesn't work in the American healthcare system than doctors do. And she's using that knowledge to help us, the patients, better interact with the system, as broken as it might be. So her new book is How to Be a Patient, The Essential Guide to Navigating the World of Modern Medicine. And Sana Goldberg, RN, joins me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
And maybe before you leave, I'll try to get your take on nurses as a labor force with this possible strike in New York coming up. But let's focus on your field guide. What's directive number one?
You know, I think if I had to say one thing, the objective of this book is to help patients to retain agency and action in the modern medical system. And I think that, we haven't done enough to help patients to do that. And so that was really my primary objective.
So is attitude number one, like see yourself as in charge and not necessarily the person wearing the white coat?
You know, I would say I think it's really about shared decision making, to go into a medical encounter and understand that, you know, you're sort of at risk of taking part in a power differential and being on the, you know, receiving end of that rather than being just a passive recipient of care, you know, coming in and being willing to ask questions when you don't understand. And, you know, really, medicine is about coming to decisions with a provider rather than having someone make them on your behalf.
So like if you're going to the doctor for something specific, come prepared, like I might prepare for an interview?
Yes, absolutely. I tell people in the book, I think I actually refer to it as an elevator pitch, but you know, it really helps to kind of write that down, have an opening statement, come into the appointment with a script, really, because the appointment time is so short today. You really, it helps you to have something prepared.
And you also write that before we're sick, find a primary care provider, even if your insurance company doesn't require it. I think everybody really likes to have a good, you know, caring primary care provider who they feel they can trust to be their partner, to be their quarterback through whatever care journeys they have to go through. How do you pick a primary care provider?
You know, it's a good match is different for everybody, but I think really paying attention to how you communicate with somebody is important. You know, looking at when you bring up an item of concern, whether it's dismissed, whether it's taken seriously, I think that really matters. I also think it's a sign of a good provider when they're willing to talk you through their thinking. I think, you know, I tell people if there's one thing to look for, that would be it in my mind.
And listeners, we can take some questions for Sana Goldberg about interacting with your healthcare providers, or maybe you're a provider with some advice for future patients. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, Sana Goldberg, RN, and her new book, How to Be a Patient, The Essential Guide to Navigating the World of Modern Medicine. And like Anthony Bourdain's advice not to eat fish in a restaurant on a Monday, you recommend making appointments for Wednesdays and in the spring or summer. Really?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of general knowledge, but I think there are times where it's, first of all, in the winter, I think just avoiding flu season and kind of waiting rooms that are, you know, crawling with everything, it can just be sensible to wait. I think also, you know, the summer months are a really good time to, if you're looking for a new provider, to start then, simply because, you know, people tend to kind of have more space and their books open up that time of year.
And you also write, don't tell white lies to your healthcare provider. Is that a problem?
You know, I think that there's this sort of propensity to please when patients go into a medical setting. I see it. I see it especially around, you know, a team of people in white coats to sort of even provide an answer or fabricate, something when when you don't have an answer. And I think that that tendency can sort of lead the conversation astray and prevents, you know, I think it's just really at the end of the day kind of a disservice to the care you're going to receive.
Is there a pattern to the way people lie to their health care providers? Is it to make themselves seem healthier than they are, sicker than they are, certain conditions that they don't want to disclose? What do you see?
I think absolutely the tendency to appear healthier than one is. You know, they always tell us when somebody when somebody tells you how many drinks they have a week, you multiply it by, you know, four. And I think that, you know, I say in the book, if you're honest about that, no one's going to hand you a pamphlet for, you know, for rehab. It's just simply better to be upfront about those things. So you can, you know, for instance, women have a higher risk of breast cancer. Women who are at higher risk for breast cancer that, you know, have a certain amount of alcohol a week, you know, that's the thing you want to disclose to your provider and be honest about, because, you know, they need that information to tailor your prevention accordingly.
Let's take a call. Kim in Morris County. You're on WNYC with Sana Goldberg. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. And that's not a lie.
The question I had was regarding choosing your PCP ahead of time. And my question was, if, first of all, insurance isn't going to pay for an appointment to go in and talk to your to a PCP to navigate the communication style, and especially people that are on limited incomes. How do you get into the PCP office, talk to the doctor to find out, is this the communication style that's going to work for me prior to being sick, and how does that get paid for?
Hi, Kim. One of the things I found in doing research for this book is that a lot of providers are willing to do what they call a meet and greet free of charge. And so that's the thing I tell patients, that you can, you know, I would say to call a clinic, explain that you're looking to establish primary care with somebody, and ask what the options are based on your insurance and based on your needs. So I really advocate for making those phone calls ahead of time and getting that information.
Kim, thank you very much. I see you caution against Googling symptoms, but you want people to be informed about their conditions and ask informed questions. So how do you strike that balance, and why not Google symptoms?
Well, you know, I say in the book, I think it can kind of lead people down a dangerous path. And I'm sure, you know, many of us have heard in this day and age, providers really are averse to that kind of, you know, the patient coming in saying, all right, WebMD, this is what I've got, you know, here we go. And I think, you know, often doing that can, it can just really lead you down a path that, well, when you come into an office, you know, if you have an established idea of what you think is going on, you know, you're sort of, it's, you're primed to not maybe give all the information you need that could lead to a sound diagnosis.
So there's a lot of good information online, and there's a lot of bad information online. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the bad information is commercially generated,
yes,
and search engine optimized, mm-hmm, right? So people can be scared.
Yes. Yeah, and I always tell people, you know, when you're a large part of the book walks through how to use research, you know, in a way that I think a lot of people are intimidated to maybe use PubMed or the National Library of Medicine, but often, you know, sources of information online that don't have an author, that don't have a date, you know, you don't really know the quality of information you're getting.
Catherine in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Sana Goldberg, RN. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you doing today, Brian?
Okay.
I have to say, I just went through this whole, exactly what your guest is talking about, at one of the major cancer centers right here in New York. And there was such resistance to the patient walking through the door armed with studies and with knowledge and with questions, so much so I was shuffled off to the clinical staff, and the doctor at one point wouldn't even meet with me. So I think that this is something that sounds really great on paper, but when it comes to the practical application of the patient walking through the door, there is such resistance for, you know, the not just doing what the doctor says.
Mm-hmm. Sana?
Hi, Catherine. I'm sorry to hear that was your experience. And, you know, I know this is sort of a maybe a harsh answer, but I would say in that situation, I would go to a new clinic. I would find new providers. And, you know, I think I feel strongly enough to say that because I think that actually impedes the care you'll receive if you aren't, you know, respected in asking questions.
Thank you, Catherine. Jim and Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
All right. One of the points, I'm hearing an excellent discussion, but to me, one of the things that happens with practitioners, they have very limited amount of time, and patients come in with a whole complex of symptoms, and unless they write them down when they go in, the discussion can go in such a direction that they never get a chance to put all their symptoms out. And one of the other things, for example, with symptoms, they need to complex them together. This happens after this, and this always is associated with nausea, whatever symptom they have. So they can have a pattern that they can provide for the physician. As far as bringing information in from web searches, et cetera, you people know what they want to have. So they may be afraid of a diagnosis of cancer, so they'll rationalize, oh, they say this symptom is associated with this, and they'll chase a diagnosis mm-hmm. that they would rather have and deny the diagnosis they might have with a pre-formatted sense of what's mm-hmm. going on based on a web search.
Do I understand correctly that you're an MD?
Yes, I am. I'm an emergency physician.
And so how do you deal with that, what you were just describing, when patients are chasing a diagnosis when you see it?
Well, you say, you know, I appreciate the information. I do a formatted review of systems, et cetera. So any headache, dizziness, chills of fever, sweating, itching, rash, so I can extract from them what else is going on besides what they believe is going on. And then you have to play the game of detective. For example, if you're talking with them in front of the wife and they're saying no and the wife looks at them with a funny look, you realize, okay, there's something wrong here. If you ask a series of questions and they say no to the series, and then when you mm-hmm. get to GI questions and they pause before they say no, then you realize that pause means they're thinking about something. So it's a bunch of detective work that requires, you know, how to interact with people, how to hear what they're saying, how to hear what they're not saying, and to realize that sometimes they are pre-formatting their perception. They're mm-hmm. pre-formatting their belief about what's wrong based on what they've read as opposed to what is really going on.
Jim, thank you very much. And you're nodding, Sana. It's, you know, and I wonder if, I mean, Jim sounds like, as an MD, he's schooled either in medical school or through his own experience in trying to read patients, mm-hmm. you know, psychologically and respond to them where they are in various ways. I'll bet you think nurses are better at that than doctors.
Well, you know, what I was thinking about as he was talking is the fact that the reality of the medical complex as it exists today is that the appointment times are just increasingly short. And I think as a result of that, the relational aspect, the communication aspect of any appointment is compromised. And so I think, you know, reference this in the book, but that impacts providers as well. You know, that is a reality that it compromises their practice just as much as it compromises the care patients receive.
Terry in Cortland Manor, you're on WNYC. Hi, Terry.
Yes, hello. I'm 69 years old, and I've started to wonder if rather than seeing just a primary care practitioner, if at some point I should be seeking a geriatric specialist or at least somebody with more geriatric experience.
Hi. Yes, absolutely. That is that's something that I would advocate for. I think everybody over the age of 65 should really start thinking about it. And, you know, it seems early, but to see somebody specializing in geriatric care will really positively impact your care.
And what do geriatric specialists, just very briefly, because we're almost out of time, mm-hmm. Get trained in differently because of, you know, a general practitioner who's a primary care physician, just by the nature of who goes to the doctor, is going to see disproportionately older people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you know, one of the things is that as we age, the body changes. We have atypical symptom presentations. So, you know, what might appear as a fever in somebody who's 25 is going to maybe appear as a UTI in somebody who is in their 70s. And so I think, you know, there's cognitive impairment is a piece of that, you know, that can show up as a symptom or as a reaction to a drug. I think the other piece of that is polypharmacy, which is just this notion that as you age, you're on more medications and you have, you know, more reactions, more symptoms.
Last thing, we have 30 seconds. As a nurse, I wonder if you have a take on labor actions, like the strike that's been authorized against three big New York hospitals. We'll see if they actually get to that point, but authorized over staffing levels.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the thing to say about that is that nurses really, and ask any nurse, they value the time that they get at the bedside with a patient. So when that is challenged or compromised, nurses are going to stand up and speak out against that. And I will as well. I mean, it's a reality.
Sana Goldberg, RN, is now author of How to Be a Patient, The Essential Guide to Navigating the World of Modern Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.